Our reading this morning is Change is a Word on Wheels by Doreau Farrar. Every Sunday morning, the church choir and I spend some time in reflection and silence before we begin the first worship service. I often offer my thoughts on the day's theme or on the state of the world, providing context to the message we bring. On a recent Sunday, I said to the choir, "So often we make the mistake of living according to our hopes instead of according to our realities." I didn't mean to say it, and I didn't know that I would, but as I did, the statement became immediately true. I wonder if, in our efforts to be the change we wish to see in the world, we stop short at our ideal selves, the idea of ourselves as we are most comfortable with. I wonder how often think, "I've already been the change, and I'm waiting idly for the rest of the world to catch up." I'm unsettled by how frequently I'm surprised by my own social idiocy. How many times need I screw up the same person's preferred pronouns, or note that I am not surprised that the person who just nearly ran me off the road is of a certain race or age, or make immediate assumptions about someone because of what I perceive to be their class? Or maybe this is a better question. How many times do I need to make mistakes at the expense of other people or other people's groups before I'm ready to admit that I'm not any better at this than the bigoted or the willfully ignorant? I am liberal, often painfully so. I am not enlightened. I am not elevated. I am not better. But I believe with everything that I am that I can be. Change is a word on wheels. It's not a destination, but a journey. If I am to be change, I must commit to humility and refuse to settle for my own comforting achievements. I'll now hand things over to Joe, who will begin today's message with an excerpt of a talk by Reverend Daniel S. Brozier on I and Thou, or I and You. Some thoughts from the theologian Martin Buber.
As has always been the human condition, there is a hunger for spirituality in this world. There is a hunger for a greater sense of connection with the holy. Perhaps we are not always conscious of this yearning, but it still shapes our lives. And so we strive in countless ways to satisfy this hunger. Sometimes we act with understanding and intentionality, but most often without a clear sense of what we seek. As a philosopher and theologian, Martin Buber came to be concerned about alienation, concerned about the, quote, sense of alienation that overcomes every human being from time to time. He wondered whether this alienation is an essential aspect of the human condition and whether it might indicate a deep-seated yearning for something necessary to human life, that is, for a true unity with the world and with God. Buber was concerned about finding a way beyond or through that alienation. He was concerned about what this sense of alienation leads humans to do. Buber says we feel alone because we relate to each other, the world, and God, in a way that estranges us. He says we engage in I-it relationships. I-it relationships create a sense of aloneness because they involve treating the other as an object to be observed and manipulated and judged. Whenever we engage the other as an it, we distance ourselves from the other, and thus we greatly limit connection. The widespread alienation that humans suffer is the result of us turning so much of the earth into its. We have turned each other into it. We have turned the natural world, a collection of its, God into it, and sometimes ourselves. And because of this, we feel so much less connection. We turn the other into an it in a variety of ways. We turn the other into an it when we put it into a category, like conservative, or fat, or troubled, and generalize about it. We turn the other into an it when we don't care about its well-being. We turn the other into an it when we only think of our needs. We turn the other into an it when we don't try to understand what the other experiences. We turn the other into an it when we deny the wholeness of the other's existence. Engaging in I-it relationships creates alienation and violence. To ease our sense of alienation, we need to see and engage the other differently, We need, as Buber puts it, to see the other not as an it, but as a thou, or a you. The parties involved are the same, but how the I sees the other is radically different, and how the I relates to the other is radically different. What is different is the I does not observe from a defined position, but engages. The I does not keep itself separate, but fully shares itself with the you. The I opens itself to be changed through its engagement with the you. The I knows that the you will be changed as well. How the I views the world is impacted by the you. There is mutuality. There is concern. There is respect. In a nutshell, there is love. We turn the other into a thou when we relate to them without preconceived notions. We turn the other into a you when we listen to what they have to teach. We turn the other into a thou when we respect their right to exist as much as our own. We turn the other into a you when we share with them the fullness of our being and open ourselves to theirs. We turn the other into a thou when we confront rather than turn away. We turn the other into a you when we realize that we are all part of the interdependent web of existence. How we engage the world does make all the difference. Whether I see you as an it or a thou changes our individual and common experience significantly. I believe in what Buber says, for I have glimpsed this through experience. I believe this to be a fundamental spiritual task facing us all. We flip back and forth between I-it and I-thou engagement, but increasingly, we need to see more and more of the world as a thou. It is not easy understanding and changing how we engage the world. I don't remember Buber outlining the steps as to how to increasingly see the world as thou. It could be there and I couldn't see it. He does say, though, that if we can establish an I-thou relationship to God, however you define that word, then we will be transformed. We will come to feel affection for everyone and everything and to have a sense of loving responsibility for the whole course of the world. This transformation, Buber tells us, is divine revelation. It is salvation. But again, how do we get there from here? The only suggestion I have to offer is that we pay more attention, that we pay attention to how we engage the world, that we notice to what degree are we treating the other as an it, how much judgment is going on, how much sharing of your life is involved, how much avoidance is present, how well do we listen to the other, how well do we confront the other, how much effort do we put into understanding the other. The basic I-you can be spoken only with one's whole being. The concentration and fusion into a whole being can never be accomplished by me, can never be accomplished without me. I requires a you to become. In order to become I must say you. All actual life is I-thou engagement. Of course, Buber is not alone with such understanding. I hear similar wisdom as well in the following Navajo chant. The mountains, I become part of you. The herbs, the fir tree, I become part of you. The morning mists, the clouds, the gathering waters, I become part of you. The wilderness, the dewdrops, the pollen, I become part of you. And I hear it in the words of St. Augustine, who said, love and do as you will.
There are so many good points that were in that discussion of Martin Buber's ideas, but two important ones that I gathered are, first, that we are prone to feelings of alienation, not just because we feel like others treat us as its, but also because of how we view others. We need community. To ease or avoid alienation, the change starts in the way that we see others. It starts inside of us, and it requires both sides seeing each other as equal, as human. So we're talking about collective transformation today, transformation of groups, yes, but also transformation as groups or transformation in groups. And the things I'd like you to take home today are that individual change is a part of group change, but it is not the end of group change. We must engage the other for real change. So where does transformation start? Does it come down to us from society? Does it come from some unknown force throughout society that just changes us all? Is it individual leaders that plant that seed in our minds? Is it the confluence of and interactions of many individual transformations and interpersonal relationships? I would say it's all of the above. Together we create a vision of the society we want, and individually, we hope someone else will bring that change and transformation. In order to collectively transform, we need to change as individuals. Society doesn't just have a change of heart unless the people who make up society do. But change as individuals is both more effective and better guided when we do that change in community. Communities with targeted efforts to change and improve themselves and their relation to the world. Some examples are support groups or small groups, accountability partners, etc. This talk today changed as I shared it with others who helped create and guide it and make it more than I could have alone. So Katie, Kayla, Tracy, Charlie, and Joe, you have my thanks. In communities geared toward positive transformation, we can work together to find a way forward. We can open up to each other's thoughts and ideas. We can open up with our own admissions of failures and encourage each other in those failures. We can admit, hopefully, that the group may have better ideas or healthier practices, or that being in a group in and of itself is a healthier practice than being alone. There's a theory called social mirror theory, which was briefly touched on by Martin Buber, actually, but he didn't know it. And it makes the claim that people are not capable of self-reflection without taking into consideration a peer's interpretation of that experience. In other words, people define and resolve their understanding about themselves through others' viewpoints. But, oh, those others' viewpoints, sometimes, we'll get to them in a minute. But the point is that communities refine and strengthen individual transformation. And that, in turn, transforms the community. So let's imagine that we, in our group, in our little group, in our big group, manage to change, to transform for the better. What then? Do we go and be lights into the world and hope that those who disagree with us simply submit to our wisdom? Do we hope that we can become a simple majority so that we can rule in a democracy without regard to our poor, mistaken fellow humans? No, democracy can also fall prey to a tyrannical majority. We could be that tyrannical majority, but it is not enough to be more in number, in power, or even in morals. If we did rule with our moral positioning as our throne and with our logic as our sword, the people struck down by our educatedness and our better understanding of the world and how it works would resent us in the end. They would not be convinced. And when enough are resentful, they become the ruling majority. We need to engage the other. And there are two ways we can do this. First, we could try and bring more into our circle. We could expand our community. I don't necessarily see us vastly expanding the membership of WUF or Unitarian Universalism in general. UUs are not exactly known for proselytism. We rarely say, hey, I've got this great faith that you need. We know, or we ought to know, that not everyone wants this exact style of community, however much we welcome them and want to share it with them. So there's the second option. We can engage the other. We can go to them and engage them on their ground, respectfully, logically, recognizing the validity of someone else's lived experience and admitting we could be wrong. Maybe not wrong about everything. Maybe wrong about everything. Any conversation between disagreeing parties should start with both sides saying, I could be wrong. Otherwise, it's not really an argument worth having. You can't logically start from the position of everything I know already is correct. And furthermore, learning and improvement inherently require change. And change can sometimes mean planting a seed that came from outside of your own mind or outside of your own circle. Sometimes we are right, though. But it's important for us to open up and understand why others think as they do. People's positions aren't always logical, however. People don't like learning because it means they have to admit that they were wrong, that they were ignorant about something. Just consider how much vulnerability is needed for someone to admit that they were wrong, to transform the way that they think about the world and about human nature. People are emotionally invested in being right and don't want to change. But if we want to be right, we need to let in what is right, to value becoming right over being right. I don't know what kind of transformation this will bring. If we engage the other and accept some of their ideas, we open up, we have exchange. If I did know where that ended up, we could skip all the difficult arguing and move on to this magical place where we all get along and understand each other. I don't believe we have all the answers yet. In order for us to reach for better things, we have to recognize that we haven't reached our peak yet. New and old ideas together are a way forward, onward and upward, and the only way to find that way is to reach outside of our current understanding, to draw the circle wider, and as a community, as many communities, work to transform our individual selves, and in so doing, manifest the change we wish to see in the world. Well, we technically have time this morning for some questions and answers, comments, if you want.
I'm interested in your group, who you are, how many. I've seen you around, but I don't know you now. So, who are you and how many are you? Maybe just a raise of hands.
We are one.
We are one. Sometimes that's the only way to go.
You set me up for it. I'm Jack. I'm around for a while anyways. I'm actually moving in a week, but 2 weeks, sorry. I'm a part of many groups, the human race, the people who live in America, members of WWOOF, people who live in Oregon. I don't know. I love humans. That's my group.
I was understanding something about a young...
Oh, yes. So my chalice circle is made up of young adults, and that's who helped me organize this service.
Good job.
Hi. Just a tiny, tiny comment about Martin Buber and his I Thou. What's especially important about it to me is that Thou was originally the informal form of address. The intimate form of address. So thank you for lifting that up.
And thank you for noting that. It was something we thought about putting in the service, but it's maybe too linguistically complex to throw at everyone in the middle.
I find that that I become a better listener when I realize that other people are listening. So big hats off to the band. I was once part of a band where we would kind of listen to service and kind of like pick songs at the drop of a hat. And it's hard to do. It's hard to have that many songs and that much flexibility and have all the whispering in the band, okay, we're going to go page, let's do this. You know, but I think that to be heard, and this goes back to your point, to be heard, you got to be a listener.
I wanted to give a great big thank you and a virtual hug to you. I was going to come up to you afterwards, but I thought I would say it, that we are just so rich for having had you, and whoever you go to, what community you go to, we'll be so lucky to have you. So, all bless.
in the 70s, a book that was important to me was Ken Kai's book, The Handbook to Higher Consciousness. And Ken gave us a mantra that I find useful: always us, living love. And it takes you back to the always us.
Back when I was young, I used to teach sociology, and I remember, it just kind of piggybacks on something somebody said, they did a study about what made people feel loved, and the number one universal answer was being heard.
I just thought that revolutionary music had to be angry punk. And I'd been listening to it my whole life, thinking it was going to make me feel better about how things were because other people were mad about it, and we could get together and yell. But then just listening to people be like, no, there's pain, there's power. It's not necessarily equal, but like we're working together and there's something on the other side. I just cried the whole time, you know.
Sometimes it is the bomb that brings us together.
And I just wanted to say in response to Jack's comment about we don't have all the answers. Maybe we don't even have anywhere near all the questions yet. And I think that's where we need to be hanging out.
I think it could be really valuable if we, as a group, started asking more questions about how we move forward as a whole society rather than just ourselves, and asking questions as to how to engage the other. Because I think you're right, we can't have those answers until we have more questions.
Thank you for a very inspiring talk and music. Very well appreciated. I wanted to remind Wolfers that were around about 10 years ago that we had two leaders for our Social Action Committee, as it was called then, by the name of Larry and Nancy. And Larry wrote a very interesting book titled We Are One. It was approximately 100 pages, and it certainly was very similar to what you presented today. It may be in our library, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad I'm not alone in saying it then.
Hi. Thank you so much for a very inspiring talk today. It's very timely, in my estimation. I hesitate to get my name for what I'm about to say next. Is how many people watch Fox News around here? Really, I think that we are so tribalized at this point, it's frightening. And I don't know exactly what to do about that, because I really do believe in the necessity of I-thou relationships to bring about lasting social change. But if you can get past the cognitive dissonance of watching what appears there, you can really feel the passion and the hurt that frequently is expressed. And they are really human beings as well.
I think it's easier for us to forget that other people are human, that other arguments came from human minds, when we don't see them, when we don't talk to them or interact with them often in our daily lives. I know I myself have very few interactions aside from my family with conservatives, so I'm in a bit of an echo chamber, as they call it.
I think one of the positive things about comedy news is that I do get to see Fox. I do get to see, you know, Alex Jones. I do get to see them on comedy news.
Absolutely. It's just so interesting, because when we were talking in our chalice circle about this exact issue, there was so much just speculation of why conservatives were making the choices that they were. And we understood that it had to do with class, and, oh, white working class men felt like they were being disenfranchised, and it was so scientific and apart from, it was all systematic. And it was treating that group like it was an it. And I felt so comfortable being like, that's okay. You're wrong and I know why. I don't even have to talk to you about it. And there, it was such a wall. And I'm so inspired that Jack took all of that very it talk and then found the thou in it. Good job, Jack.
So maybe what we need to do then is, because I'm a sociologist, not by trade, but by hobby. And you know, when I read papers about sociological issues or opinions, it's very much from an it perspective. I look at the two sides and like, okay, there's the facts. I don't always look at people and recognize how it feels to be in that position or why they're in that position. So I think we have time for, let's do one more question.
So my significant other is unemployed, and he does a lot of watching both Fox and CNN. And I come home from work, and I ask him, hey, what happened? And he has it from both points. So when I get on Facebook and I see something, he'll be like, hey, you know, think about this. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I work in high tech, and I do a lot of screen sharing and see what's on people's devices. And even though I have these conversations, when I see, like, the Fox News icon on their phone, my first intake is like, oh, now I know who I'm talking to. And invariably, they surprise me. I will have some kind of connection. And I just, and in the back of my head, okay, yeah, but you got that Fox News icon on your whatever device, right? And it's made me kind of question myself in a lot of different ways. I'm like, okay, so just because you have that icon doesn't mean that you and I can't relate, right? And I help them through their problems, and some of them are so gracious. And so there's, you know, there's a human connection there, even though we have the differences.
Absolutely. All right, let's take one more question then. Or comment.
I'm Susan Frommeyer, and last night we hung all of my art, and I just want to say that the team that did this was magnificent. I mean, they were so thoughtful and artful, and I couldn't have done it myself, I can assure you. And so I just wanted to thank anybody that was here that did that for that experience. It was wonderful, and I hope you enjoy it.